baby, then let me be your loving teddy bear. Put a chain around my neck and lead me anywhere. Oh, let me be,
oh, let him be
your old teddy bear. I don't wanna be a tiger, 'cause tigers play too rough. I don't wanna be a lion, 'cause lions ain't the kind you love enough. But I just wanna be your teddy bear. Put a chain around my neck and lead me anywhere. Oh, let me be,
oh, let him be
your teddy bear.
Well, yeah, a little bit of Elvis there for you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Teddy Bear, do you remember that song? Well, if you're older, you remember it. I remember it. Teddy Bear song. It's about 1962. Well, anyway, good morning and welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy, along with my buddy and my partner, Big Ed Davis. Thank you very much for being with us. It is Friday, April the 9th. In a few minutes, we are going to be talking with Trita Parsi, Trita Parsi of the Quincy Institute. We're going to talk about returning to the table with Iran, the Iran nuclear deal. He is a proponent of going back, which the Biden administration is proposing to do. So we're going to have a very interesting discussion. And President Biden announcing a set of executive actions yesterday on gun control. Here's the deal. Do they mean anything, or are they just political wallpaper? And since she's been put in charge of it, when is Kamala Harris going to go down to the southern border? Is she going to go? It's looking pretty stupid, isn't it? Is it a joke with her? We're going to talk about both of those things with the proprietor of the barber pole a little later in the show, Andrew Ceresi. And the misleading statements about job creation under Joe Biden and his administration. We're going to take a look at that as well. And in our ultimate top 10, we got a good one for you. The top 10 best markets for first-time homebuyers. By the way, Freedom Works, we are sponsored in part by the aforementioned Andrew Ceresi, his barbershop. He is the master barber. He has the best haircutting group with him in Tampa Bay, in my opinion. They are located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. It is on State Road. It is just north of State Road 580 on Overcash Drive. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. 733-3773. And by the way, don't forget Good Morning Clearwater every Monday through Friday preceding our show, 8 to 10 a.m. here on the Tantalk Radio Network with Paul and Tracy Allen. All right. Well, Prince Philip, you know, Prince Philip, Queen Elizabeth, they've been with us, it seems like, forever. And Prince Philip died today at Windsor Castle. He just was about to turn 100 years of age. The royal family confirming this. The statement, it is with deep sorrow that Her Majesty the Queen has announced the death of her beloved husband. So he married her in 1957, the Queen. She was Queen for 4 years by then. She ascended the throne in 1953. He himself came from royalty. He himself was actually of royal stock in Europe. And he fought in World War II. I believe it was in the Navy. He always stood in the background. I'll tell you what, he was the ultimate second man. He was the ultimate man in waiting, or whatever you want to call it. He just took it upon himself to be that way. And in a rare interview, to mark his 90th birthday, he said, "I reckon I've done my bit. I want to enjoy myself for a bit now with less responsibility, less rushing about, less preparation." He said, "On top of that, your memory's going." He said, "I can't remember names." You know, when you stand in line and you got to meet all these people, I wonder how many hands he shook in his life, if you think about it. Can you imagine how many hands he must have shaken It's standing in line, always waiting behind the queen, kind of a step behind her and everything that was being done. Anyway, for my money, he was a good man. And he's dead at the age of 99. Ed, you going to live that long, do you think? You're going to make it to 99? It's a long time.
I was saying that getting past 80, you're pretty well. But, you know, when you get in your 80s, you start looking over your shoulder.
You do. Yeah. You start realizing the inevitable. Yeah.
But 99, I mean, yeah, it's short of 100, but you can't complain of that.
No, you can't. And he had the life of Riley, you might say.
I know, he was sick.
It must be terribly confining, though, you know.
We were talking earlier that the sad thing is that when two people have been around each other that long and married that long and together so long that usually, you know, shortly after,
the other one goes. You really do kind of bond that way, don't you? I think there's truth to that. And she's got to be couple of years younger.
She's 94.
94, okay, mm-hmm. Yeah. I'll tell you what, I guess it's that good cooking or something. When you're a queen and a king and or whatever, you can live a longer.
And the thing is, it's going to be...
As long as you don't get shot or something, right. Like the old days.
We were talking earlier that all the stuff with Prince Harry that's just kind of moved on, just barely. Now there's going to be drama. Does he come back for the funeral?
I was thinking of that.
You know, does he bring his wife? And
yeah, because that was his grandfather.
Yeah, so I think he goes back, but I don't think she goes with him because it becomes a sideshow then.
Yeah, that might be right. I wonder if they have any regrets about coming over here. Those two.
According to her,
you know? I know. Maybe him, I mean.
Well, sorry to say, people sometimes don't stay married forever. And at one point, if they don't work out, he may want to come back.
you think there's a reasonable chance he's going to get tired of this woman?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So in the meantime, Biden gets up yesterday. He announces some new executive actions. These things go nowhere, by the way. And legislative proposals on gun control. He's saying gun violence is a public health crisis. Meanwhile, he's ignoring the real public health crisis going on in the southern border, right? That one we can ignore. But we got to worry about these 3D guns or...
The ghost guns.
We
got to
worry about the ghost guns.
The ghost guns, yeah.
That should keep us up at night.
Yeah. Meanwhile,
right?
In Portland, they're having park rangers police the streets because it's so bad with gun violence.
Exactly.
But he didn't bring that up.
No, he won't bring any inner city violence up. Inner city violence is separate.
Yeah.
You know, it's separate. Like in Chicago. They have the strictest gun laws in Chicago, and yet they get more people shot in Chicago than any other city. So you tell me why, if you have the strictest gun laws, you also have the most shootings.
And the thing is, just before his little speech or whatever, and, you know, of course, Kamala had to get up there and introduce him. I'm like, what is she doing there? Why isn't she down at the border?
Exactly.
You know?
In fact, the Arizona governor, attorney general, is specifically inviting her to get her rear end down to the border. He's got an invitation out.
Yeah.
Come on, man. As Joe Biden would say, come on, man. Or in this case, come on, woman.
Come on, man.
You know? He said, I'll buy her a pastry. That should entice her. She seems like she's got a sugar thing. I'll buy her a pastry if she'll come down here. Now, speaking of that, she did go to a bakery on the other side of the country, a black-owned bakery. So she'll go to the bakery in the east, like around Philadelphia, but no time to get down to that border.
Mm-mm.
Uh-huh. All right. Okay, let us take our break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Trita Parsi. We're going to talk about the Iran nuclear deal.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Yeah, hello everybody. We have a great new show coming up for you on Thursdays from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. starting April 8th. The show is called The Sounds Around Town. It will feature independent artists from our community. We will interview them and give them a chance to play their music on the radio. We will also feature some of the greats who already live in our community. So check us out every Thursday, The Sounds Around the Town, 5 to 6 p.m. on the Can Talk Radio Network, AM 1340, FM 106.1.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
We are back on a Friday morning and delighted to have you with us. And we're delighted to have Trita Parsi join us. He is Executive Vice President of the Quincy Institute. He was formerly with the UN Security Council. He's also the co-founder and the former president of the National Iranian American Council. And Trita believes that our returning to the table with the Iran nuclear deal is an extremely good thing. Trita, welcome to Freedom Works.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolute pleasure. And I really have been looking forward to talking with you on this very, very interesting topic. First off, President Trump and his administration abandoned the Iran nuclear agreement in 2018. They didn't trust Iran. Do you trust Iran?
No, it's not about trusting Iran. This deal is about trusting the inspections regime that we ourselves designed and put together to make sure that we know everything the Iranians are doing in the program, and as a result, we don't have to trust them at all. We just have to trust that our insights and inspections in the regime is giving us the perfect picture of what's going on there so that we don't have to worry about them building a bomb.
Right.
Part of the reason I think this is so important, and this is where I think the Obama administration in some ways did not fully explain this to the American people, is that this deal, this agreement of that makes sure that we put the Iranian program in a box, is our ticket out of the Middle East. We had to check the Iranian program in order for ourselves to be able to check out of the Middle East, at least militarily. I'm not saying that the U.S. should leave the region diplomatically or economically, but having 19 bases and 58,000 troops in these endless wars in the Middle East is just something that the American public is completely tired of.
No question about it. But when you talk about the inspections, it would be great if we can actually get in there and be allowed to inspect. But the storyline goes, Iran won't let us go to the places we most need to go to check on whether or not they are still involved in producing this nuclear material and getting closer to, you know, having nuclear weapons. They are not allowing us to get into the important places. Is that not true?
That is completely false.
It is.
We continue to this day have the inspections of all the different sites that we need to have inspections at. And even in the case of the Iranians not declaring a site and we having suspicions that something is going on there, then we have a mechanism in which we go to the IAEA and present our evidence, and the IAEA will request access. And this has actually happened. The Iranians actually ended up having to give access to another site that they at first had not wanted to, because that site had been inspected before and that file was supposed to be closed. It was reopened. The Iranians gave access. So we do know that these mechanisms work.
Okay, but
the idea that we are not getting access to the different sites is just complete baloney. It's unfortunate that there's so much misinformation
really?
About that.
Okay, I've been misinformed. I was under the impression we are not allowed to go openly into every place that we would like to go. I say we, the inspectors. to look. Now, are they or are they not producing nuclear material?
They are producing nuclear material. They're producing low enriched uranium. They've also started 20% enriched uranium. Now, the deal, when it was functioning, which it was before Trump walked out, made sure that the Iranians could never have more than 400 kilos of low enriched uranium on their own soil. You need 1,200 kilos of low enriched uranium to be able to make a nuclear weapon. So they would never have enough material for a bomb on their own soil. Mm-hmm. Trump left the deal, and guess how much LEU the Iranians have right now? They have 2,500 kilos, and they started also to produce enrichment at higher levels. This was actually the perfect demonstration as to why the deal was necessary, because we're in a much worse situation now than we were before. Mm-hmm. The U.S. intelligence services said that because of the deal, we were always a minimum of a one-year breakout capability for the Iranians, which means that if they made a decision to build a bomb, it would take them a full year to have that material. And we would be able to catch them within 24 hours of them making that decision. Now, because we don't have the deal in place because Trump walked out, the Iranians have 2,500 kilos of LEU and I think roughly 93 kilos of 20% enrichment, of which they had zero during the deal.
But how do you know for sure that they had only 400 kilos prior to Trump walking out? How do you know that for sure?
We know that for sure because it's not that the inspections are this kind of old-style inspections in which people are running around with white helmets inside of their program and taking measurements. We had cameras and instruments inside their nuclear program.
We do.
That measured things live and sent those that data electronically to Vienna, where the IAEA headquarters are. Mm-hmm. And it's actually very fascinating to me how we saw that as these inspections began, even though a lot of Republicans still officially were not happy with the deal, in Congress you could definitely sense that they were starting to appreciate the value of the deal because we had so much better intelligence on what was taking place inside the Iranian nuclear program as a result of these inspections.
Okay. We're talking with Trita Parsi. He is executive vice president of the Quincy Institute. He knows a great deal about Iran. He's a former president of the National Iranian American Council. Trita, what do you think Israel thinks about the United States going back and reopening, restarting, or bringing back the Iran nuclear agreement? What do you think Israel feels? How do they feel about this?
It depends on who in Israel you ask. If you talk to the Netanyahu government, it's crystal clear. They're dead set against it. They don't want the United States to go back into the deal in any way, shape, or form. If you talk to the Israeli security establishment, you will get far more nuance. There are plenty of people in the security establishment in Israel that actually lobbied in favor of the nuclear deal on Capitol Hill in 2015. On the other side was the Israeli embassy. So when it comes to the security establishment, there's plenty of people there who see the value of the deal. Mm-hmm. But I think for primarily political reasons, the Netanyahu government, Netanyahu himself, has just made this a major issue of completely being against it. He has become personified with the idea that Iran is an existential threat in Israel. So it's impossible for him politically to be able to accept any type of agreement. There is, in my view, a legitimate geopolitical argument on the Israeli side, because what they're afraid of with this deal is that tensions between the United States and Iran would be reduced, and the United States would slowly but surely shift away from the Middle East. It would shift its focus to China, perhaps, or other more pressing issues. And Israel would be left in the region still having a hostile Iran, a non-nuclear hostile Iran, but nevertheless, a hostile Iran, but without the full backing of the United States. I think that's a legitimate concern on the Israeli side, but it is an Israeli concern. Mm-hmm. We have to ask ourselves, what is the primary interest of the United States? And I would say that one of the most important things we need to do, because three presidents in a row have promised to do it, and unfortunately they have not done it. The promise they have given is that we're going to get out of the Middle East. They've not delivered on that. They need to deliver on it, because we cannot any longer afford having so much of our resources and blood wasted in the Middle East in wars that cannot be won and wars that frankly do not matter to our national interests.
Okay. Do you think Iran will ever have a nuclear weapon? If you had to make an educated guess, do you think they're going to have a nuclear weapon within 4 or 5 years? Do they possibly have one right now?
No, if they had a nuclear weapon right now, the equation would look extremely different. Trump would never have been able to do maximum pressure against the Iranians if they had a nuclear weapon. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a very clear reason as to why his approach to North Korea was to go there and hug their leader, and his approach to Iran was to impose the most devastating sanctions that ever have been in place. It's because the North Koreans do have nuclear weapons and the Iranians do not.
So are they going to get one, do you think? Do you think Iran will have one, regardless of what Biden does with the treaty?
No. I think if we have the deal back in place, they will
never have one.
They will never have one, because at the end of the day, I think it's very important to understand the geopolitical calculations of the Iranians because of their geopolitical situation.
Mm-hmm.
The Iranian nuclear program has been going on for more than 50 years. It was actually the United States that helped start it. It was actually Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld that played a critical role back in the 1970s, convincing the Shah of Iran that he needed to have nuclear reactors, and he needed to buy those reactors from Westinghouse and other American producers.
Mm-hmm.
If the Iranians wanted the nuclear bomb, if they were dead set on getting a nuclear bomb, they would have had it by now. The Pakistanis went from nothing to a nuclear bomb in 9.5 years because they themselves made it clear they're going to have nuclear bombs even if they have to eat grass. Because for them, it was existential, mindful of the fact that they were sitting next to this giant India who did have nuclear weapons. Iran's geopolitical circumstances are vastly different. If the Iranians actually get a nuclear weapon and it leads to a nuclear arms race in the region, it actually is to the detriment of the Iranians, because right now Iran is a giant in the Middle East. It is 20 times the size of most of its neighbors when it comes to population and size. But if they get a nuclear weapon and then tiny Bahrain gets a nuclear weapon, well, then Iran and Bahrain are equals because they can both destroy each other.
Yeah.
Whereas right now, Iran is superior. So the Iranians have strong interest not going in that direction. I think, frankly, most of the stuff that they have been doing on the nuclear front has actually been to create bargaining chips for themselves in this negotiation with the United States. But we cannot risk them having a pathway to a bomb. And that's why this deal is so important, because it closed off the four different pathways the Iranians did have.
Again, we're talking with Trita Parsi, Executive Vice President of the Quincy Institute. What about the religious political leadership there in Iran, the Ayatollah, and their stranglehold on their people? Is there any chance? I mean, there's been some, it seems like some rumblings against the Ayatollah and the leadership. Is there any chance that that goes away in the near future, or do they have quite a grip on their people and country?
Oh, there's been tons of rumblings, because the population clearly wants to see a different future for the country. And I think this regime is only capable to stay in power because of their monopoly on force, but also to a large part because of the economic isolation that they're in. Just to give you an example, as a result of Trump sanctions, 14 out of 15 largest private construction companies in Iran went out of business. But the government-controlled, the IRGC-controlled construction company, tenfolded its number of contracts. This is a phenomenon we see in every country that has been put under very intense sanctions. The private sector gets destroyed, whereas the state-owned sector actually flourishes, because they're the ones who have access to all kinds of different tools that help them circumvent sanctions. And when that happens, the state grows stronger and their control over the population grows stronger. And it actually makes it more difficult for the people to be able to overthrow their leaders and move in a democratic direction.
So do you think there's ever a chance democracy comes to Iran? Is this
Democracy existed in Iran. I think it's important for all of us
to
know.
Yes, way back.
Iranians had a democracy, and unfortunately the CIA made a coup in 1953 against the democratically elected prime minister of Iran, Mohammad Mossadegh, and put the Shah in place.
Right.
Much of what we're seeing today is unfortunately the repercussions.
That's true.
I am absolutely confident that the Iranians can move in that direction, but I don't think that can happen easily, at least, as long as there's so much tensions between the United States and Iran and its neighbors. That type of attention actually helps securitize the internal atmosphere in Iran and makes it more difficult for pro-democracy activists and people who are pushing, and there are plenty of them, pushing for democratic reform.
What do you think that the Iranian government thinks of Biden?
I don't know. I think on the one hand, they are probably quite pleased that Trump is not there, not because they thought that Trump wouldn't negotiate. I think actually they knew that if they had managed to get to the table with Trump, they probably could have gotten a better deal. Mm-hmm. But because they felt that Trump was not pursuing a policy that he himself had much of a say in, but rather he was so much of it was outsourced to Saudi Arabia, to the UAE, to Bibi Netanyahu. And indeed, I mean, what we have been doing in the region for the last couple of years, even though Trump did give a big talk about leaving the region, that's not what we did. And we intensified our involvement in the war in Yemen, in which we now have, thanks to the Saudis, the biggest humanitarian crisis in the world. We have absolutely no interest in that fight. If anything, we should not have been taking the side of al-Qaeda in that fight, in the sense that the Saudis at times were collaborating with al-Qaeda in order to defeat the Houthis. The Houthis were the biggest force against al-Qaeda in Yemen.
Do you think Biden wants to pull out of all of these entanglements?
I think they recognize the necessity of doing this. I think they're moving somewhat in that direction. I would like to see a much clearer path and political will to go in that direction. I think overall, foreign policy has not been his priority. He has been so much more focused on COVID and internal issues. And as a result, he has not given, at least not so far, these foreign policy issues their due attention. But the initial decision to stop providing the Saudis with offensive weaponry in Yemen is a first good step, because we really should drag ourselves out of that war.
Trita, it has been a real pleasure having you on. I really enjoy talking with you about this issue. I'd like to have you back down the road.
And love to.
Yes, indeed. The best to you. Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you so much. Bye.
Trita Parsi. All right, we're going to take our break. When we come back, President Biden announcing executive actions on gun control. And where is Kamala Harris? Is she going to visit the southern border? We're going to talk about it with the proprietor of the only poll that matters, the Barber Poll, Andrew Ceresi.
You must understand, the touch of your hand makes my pulse react.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen.
And I'm Tracy Allen.
Please join us every weekday morning from 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
You can also watch us on Facebook Live on our Good Morning Clearwater Facebook page and on YouTube. Just search Tantalk Radio Network.
Every morning we'll be talking about current events, sports.
Yay, sports.
News, entertainment, weather, and traffic. Have an opinion? You can call us.
That's right. Join us every weekday morning, 8 a.m. till 10 a.m. on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. We are back. And by the way, we are here Monday, Tuesday, and Friday, 10 to 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the great Tantalk Radio Network. However, if you are not available to listen to us live, thanks to Big Ed, you can listen to us on our podcast. He puts all of our shows on podcast. Just get to our website, ourfreedomworks.com. Ourfreedomworks.com. You can listen any old time your little heart desires. Well, here's Biden stepping up to the plate yesterday, talking about this issue that nobody is, you know, he wants to now set up these, I think, nonsensical executive orders. He announced a set of actions, and proposals on gun control. He said that gun violence is a public health crisis. You know, he's ignoring the real crisis down to the southern border. But this is a crisis all of a sudden. You know, he won't talk about the inner city shootings. They never do anything about it. And every one of those cities is run by a Democrat. Of course, that's not an issue. He says, this is Biden, nothing I'm about to recommend in any way impinges on the Second Amendment. He said these are phony arguments. These are phony. Yeah, but he's trying to chip away at it. So we got the proprietor of the barber pole, and he's a proud owner of a gun. If you don't like the way he cuts your hair, he'll pull that gun out. So, Andrew, what do you think about the way Biden is trying to chip away at the Second Amendment on this?
Well, he could try all he wants. All he's going to do is cause a civil war and keep chipping away.
Yeah. I mean, they're not going to vote for anything like this. He can't do anything by just standing there and trying to issue an executive order.
Well, the guy, he's not doing nothing anyway.
True.
He's Biden. He's nothing but talk. Look at the border. Look at the gas prices. Look at the taxes. What's he doing? Yeah, the only thing he's doing is concentrating on destroying the country. Okay? And just like you were talking about the Iran nuclear deal, I was listening to the conversation a little bit here earlier. Nothing about being pro-Iranian, but I wouldn't trust them as far as I can throw them. We should send them another $150 billion so they can keep enriching their uranium. Let me tell you what's going to happen with Biden with his talks going to Iran. Now that China guaranteed them $400 billion in the next 10 or 15 years, I believe, to invest in Iran, as long as Iran gives all the oil to China, what do you think is going to happen when Biden starts talking to them? They're going to laugh in his face.
I don't see how they're going to slow down Iran's march towards a nuclear weapon. And when I spoke to Trita Parsi, and he said that we have open access, I didn't want to get into the weeds with him. How do we have open access? They just won't let us visit certain sites, and that is the truth. We can't just
trust them as far as I could throw them.
Right. And then he said, well, we got the aerial shots and this. Well, the aerial shots are fine, but you can't. It doesn't mean you can't hide what you're doing.
Where did this guy come from? First of all, he worked for the UN, right?
Yes.
Okay, that should be your answer right there.
True.
Trump was 100% right with what he did with Iran, and they should keep every freaking sanction they got against them. Let China take care of Iran now. Mm-hmm. Let them deal with him.
So we got Kamala Harris, who's been appointed the czar of the border. Somehow she can't find her way down to see it. And we've got the attorney general from the state of Arizona begging her to get her rear end down there. You see, he'll even offer her some pastry if she'll come down. Do you think she's ever going to get down there and really address what's going on? And have you heard recently about the way the sexual abuse going on in some of these places down there?
Yes, I did hear about it, Paul. It's disgusting what's going on. It's disgusting that this administration isn't doing a damn thing about it, Paul. Okay, let these people come in. Let them sleep in an aluminum foil bag. Send them home where they belong. This guy is doing nothing. The people wasted their time. Well, I don't believe the people put him in to begin with, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Trump was 100% right about the border. He was 100% right about Iran. People believe me. They're going to be begging for Trump here in another 4 months.
We're talking with the proprietor of the barber poll, Mainstream America's most important poll. Andrew, you and I were chatting yesterday about, and you have kind of a solution, you think, to that phosphate leakage down in Manatee County. I want you, do you mind explaining what you would...
No, you know, it's pretty simple because you got the Army Corps of Engineers there. Who's trying to do this? What are we going to do with it and everything else? If you think about it, you got, what is it, nitrogen and phosphate there, right?
Yes.
That's fertilizer.
It is.
I mean, they sit there and tell you they can't put it into the water because the grass is going to grow. The algae, of course it is. It's fertilizer. You want to drain that pond, it's very simple. Get these fertilizer trucks at the farmers. They got big tank trucks, like the milk and gasoline trucks that you see.
Mm-hmm.
And it might take some time. Fill up those trucks. Send them fertilizer trucks down every highway where there's grass and trees and plants growing. Fertilize them. The ground is the plants, the trees, probably going to eat up 60-70% of that nitrogen and phosphates. The rest of it's going to go through the ground in a natural filter. Maybe you're stuck with 2% going into the aquifer instead of all this worrying about what they got to do with it. Turn it into a positive.
Don't you have to dilute?
Well, who knows the concentrate of it?
The concentrate?
But, you know, water will dilute anything. You could take it down to what you got to take it
okay.
down. Spread it out and get rid of it. Put it right through the...
Well, I think it's kind of a good idea if it would work.
I don't see why it wouldn't, Paul. Like I said, they got all these big scholars there trying to figure out the problem, trying to spend millions and millions of dollars on how to fix it and get rid of it. It's simple. Use it.
I think we ought to get this over to the governor's office, and you have a conduit with his dad. Maybe we can get it done that way.
I'm telling you, it makes sense, doesn't it?
It does to me, but I don't. I'm not.
You're worried about the grass growing in the Gulf. You're worried about the algae. Let's make our plants grow, produce more oxygen for us, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I make up that phosphate. Believe me, I put it on my lawn. I see how that grass grows.
Okay. Well, I mean, I want some for my hedges if it really works. That's the thing.
Well, we should go take a sample of it and put it on our plants, huh?
Yeah. We ought to try that out.
That's the simplest solution. And you know what? Fertilize the crap out of Florida. Everything will be green and beautiful. The rest of it goes to the ground. You're stuck with 1 or 2% going into the aquifer. That's a lot better than 100%.
No, you're right. You're right. So, Governor Ron DeSantis, he has become the most important governor in the country. Everybody is focusing on Governor DeSantis. He's done a very good job. He's done a very good job about controlling the virus, about how to handle the virus situation in a state that has a very high percentage of elderly, the ones that are most vulnerable. Nobody, even his critics seem to think he's actually done a good job with those people. They tried to tar and feather him and say that he's got some sort of backroom deal with Publix, which is our major food chain here in Florida. And it turns out that the simplest look into what he did completely nullifies that lie. He actually was involved with both the CVS and Walgreens pharmacies in dispensing the drug before a panel sat down and said, look, we got all these Publix pharmacies. Let's work out a deal because everybody can get to a Publix in the entire state. So he does. And so now Publix is able to administer the virus shot. But they're coming after him because of that to say, well, he took $108,000 from Publix, which is, by the way, pocket change. Go ahead.
You know, Paul, what he did only makes sense. I mean, do you want to sit there and put up tents all over the state of Florida, get people to go there, this was already organized. The things were there. They all had their, what do they call them, their mini doctor's offices and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They were already set up to do it. All they needed was a vaccine.
Right.
It makes sense to me.
Yeah.
It would make sense to anybody else. You got CVS all over the place. You got Publix all over the place.
Right.
They were going to set up the tents in the public parking lots, probably.
I was at a Publix, the one over there at Seabreeze Shopping Plaza, which is, you may know is up at Curlew and Highway 19. I was there picking up a prescription, and there they were. You could go right over, if you had an appointment, you'd go right over there, right there, and they would administer the shot, the pharmacist guy. They had somebody there on, you know, administering the shot.
That's what I'm saying. It's all ready to go.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Sit there and take time to set up everything and plan it out. It's already there.
Right.
Only a fool would not take advantage of that.
Correct. So when are you going for your shot?
Not.
No. You mean you're not going to be in the line in Publix to get a shot?
I was cutting Ed's hair the other day, and he didn't fall asleep on me, but I think his hair was getting a little thinner in the back. So I don't know if that's a... You know, what do they call it from the shot there? One of the reactions we get, but
might
be getting like me in the back over there pretty soon. We're going to look like monks.
Wow! So you think that it would cause people to lose their hair?
It might make it grow it. I don't know. But
oh, we're not sure.
I'm not taking the chance. We'll find out a year from now with all you people. I saw a thing the other day that made me really laugh because you ever see that movie with all the zombies? What's it called?
Oh, there's a million of those.
With the zombies coming after you.
Yeah.
This is you, the one person that didn't get the shot, and they had like 50 zombies coming after
you. Correct. They all got the virus.
They all got the shot. The one guy didn't even take it off. Well, I'm not taking no chances yet. If the Lord wants me, he can come and get me.
Oh, Lord. Oh, my goodness. You are. And go ahead.
The Blood, Sweat, and Tears did a song years ago. It's called I'm Not Afraid of Dying. That's me.
Oh, well, I'm glad to hear it, but, you know, I mean, you're just not convinced. You're just not convinced that that thing's going to make things better. Okay.
I'm not convinced. Listen.
I can understand.
1% death rate. 1%. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I don't see no reason to jump out, get a panic, and get a shot and be afraid.
Right.
Not at 1%. And like I said, as far as their 500,000 deaths go, let's be real. You know it's only half of that, which would bring you down to the regular flu every year.
Yeah.
And people are going to die. And I'm not going to let 1% make me run around like a chicken without a head, worried about getting the virus, afraid to shake some. No, I wash my hands 50 million times a day, make sure. It's just common sense, Paul. I don't want to get the flu. I don't want to get a cold.
I understand.
But I'm not taking a chance with a 1% death rate. No
okay.
way in hell.
All right, my friend. I understand. Hey, listen, thank you so much, as always. As always. And I'm looking forward to Monday when we talk again.
You got it, Paul. You guys have a good weekend.
And the same to you.
Take care.
The Master Barber. All right. Let us take our break. And when we come back, these misleading statements about job creation under Joe Biden, we're going to take a look at it.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Men, when it's time for your next haircut, if you don't visit Andrew's Master Barbershop, then you won't get the best haircut in Tampa Bay. First off, their staff consists of the best barbers you're going to find. They'll give you exactly the cut you want. Second, you won't find a better haircutting environment. Sparkling clean, modern, and comfortable. And third, the price. They beat any of those expensive hair salons, and seniors get a terrific discount. Andrew's Master Barbershop, it's located in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. That's on Overcash Drive, just north of State Road 580. It's open Tuesdays through Saturdays, and you just call for your appointment at 727-733-3773. That's 727-733-3773.
Join Joe Pippin for Ask an Attorney Radio Show, Saturday mornings from 8 to 9 a.m. Ask an Attorney is Florida's longest-running radio show for over 35 years now. So if you've got a question for an attorney, call Joe Pippin during his live radio show. Ask a question. Get an answer. Free of charge, of course. Saturday mornings, live from 8 to 9 a.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network. Or to contact Joe Pippin directly, call 727-586-3306.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we are back. And what's going on here? Now, the stock market's been doing great. I have not seen it this morning, but it's reaching, if it hasn't reached it, an all-time high. Now, it might fluctuate a little bit back and forth, but let's be honest. Since Biden became president, it's basically been going up. So, of course, they're going to take some credit for that. In the meantime, they're trying to raise taxes on the wealthy and on corporations again. Senior officials of the Biden administration recently made what some would say are misleading claims about how many jobs would potentially be created by Biden with this $2.2 trillion spending proposal. They are incorrectly looking at an independent analysis from Moody's. Have you heard about that when he keeps bringing up Moody's, who says this and Moody's says that? Well, the firm Moody's estimated the U.S. economy is going to add about 16 million jobs between this last quarter that we went through in 2020 and the fourth quarter of 2030. Now, first of all, think about it. That's some idiot in the back room. How are you going to ever figure out how many jobs are going to be created? So many things are going to change. This is 2021. They're going to project in 9 years? In 9 years, how many jobs? So they say they're going to add roughly 16.3 million jobs between these periods if Biden's proposal were to pass. Are you kidding me?
Well, you know,
how do
Paul,
they know that?
The stock market's going to continue to do well just as long as the government keeps handing out money.
That's true.
When that stops.
Except when inflation and all the other things.
And then the taxing starts, that's when it takes a nosedive.
I think there's good sense in that. They react like a little child. The stock market reacts to the ice cream cone, which is sitting right in front of you, and the immediate gratification.
I always said the stock market is like high school drama queens or rumors, you know, high school rumors. That, you know, so-and-so in the Middle East is having a problem.
Yeah.
Let's jack gas prices up, you know. The price of oil goes up. You know, it's just...
It's an immediate gratification or need situation.
Yeah.
Not long-term. Okay. I think there's truth to that. But speaking of this $16 million Moody's projection, then Moody's analytics economists estimated that the U.S. is going to add 19 million jobs over the same time period, indicating the proposal would be responsible for about the Biden proposal would be responsible for about 2.7 million of those 19 million. But the Biden administration indicated his proposal would create the 19 million jobs. So the point is that even if Moody's is right, the 19 million jobs that would be created, only about 2 million of those jobs would have anything to do with this Biden $2 trillion deal. So they're taking credit for the other 17 million jobs, and they shouldn't. Here's Pete Buttigieg, who is now our energy guy, right? He said, the American jobs plan is about a generational investment. It's going to create 19 million jobs. Do you hear that? Their plan is going to create 19 million, he says. And he says, we're talking about economic growth that's going to go on for years and years. Okay. Anyway, I think we made the point. Now, before we get to the top 10, Ed, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Major League Baseball game. First of all, they normally play it around the 4th of July, don't they? The All-Star game?
You're talking about the All-Star game.
I'm sorry,
yeah.
Major League Baseball
All-Star
game.
Yeah, that's considered the midway point.
So we're going to move it from Atlanta to Denver.
Mm-hmm.
Atlanta actually has a higher concentration of African Americans.
51% black.
As opposed to Denver.
9%.
So we're going in the opposite direction, supposedly. Major League Baseball... And all of the small businesses around the Atlanta Major League Baseball All-Star Game and the whole bit. So this is going to backfire.
Do you realize how many part-time workers there are with these teams, these NFL Major League Baseball teams that work in the stadium and depend on that? You know, they're going to lose that All-Star money. And that's just...
The city of Atlanta.
That's the very short of it. Not to even mention the hotels and everything that goes on for that. That's a three-day event.
Do you think the idea then of, like, the Republicans saying, well, then pull the Augusta Masters out of there because it's... Why hold that there? I think that's a good argument.
Supposedly, the majority of Major League Baseball owners were left speechless when that happened. Now, the Super Bowl is going to be in Arizona. And already, I believe it's either the governor or the mayor, I believe it's the governor, said, go ahead and try that here. We don't care.
You mean that there's
in other words, if they're leaning towards the same thing with the voting issue that Atlanta's done. They're leaning towards that.
And he's saying we're not going to be intimidated.
You're not going to influence our decision at all. And that's what needs to happen. And look at the companies that supposedly were going to boycott baseball if this did not go through, if they didn't move the game out of Atlanta. And moving it now, you got, I think Coca-Cola was one. Home Depot was one.
Home Depot is very concerned. That guy that is a concern. I'm surprised Home Depot did that.
Well, Home Depot is also owned partly by Arthur Blank, who's the owner of the Atlanta Falcons.
I see.
He had a major part in
Why
Home
is
Depot.
He wanting to move, stop his advertising then?
I don't think he used to have a major role in it.
Oh, okay.
I don't think he does today.
Okay. Well, it's very, very interesting, and I think it's backfiring.
Yeah, it is.
We'll see. Okay, it is time for our top 10. We have a good one. The top 10 markets for first-time home buyers. Where do you want to go to get the most for your money? Now, the real estate listings website, Realtor.com, compiled a list of the best marketplaces for potential new homeowners. So here we go. Top 10 best places. Number 10, Rapid City, South Dakota. And you can look out your back window and you can see four of the presidents chiseled on the mountainside. Mm-hmm. So go to Rapid City. Number 9. I don't know exactly where this is, Ed. You might. In Harrisonburg, Virginia? Would that be near Washington or would it be?
I don't know.
Harrisonburg, Virginia. All right. Number 8.
Oops.
Get yourself out to Taylorsville, Utah. It must be close to Salt Lake City because if you get any too far away from Salt Lake City, all you got are mountains. So it must be close. Number 7. Schenectady, New York. Good old Schenectady.
Hmm.
They've got good home prices up there. I wonder how nice a place that is. Probably is. Number 6. And I've been to this one, and it's a beautiful area. Savannah, Georgia.
Yeah.
It's a really, very...
Nice country, yeah.
It's a nice country. Historical place and the whole bit. Number 5. Another place. Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Good old Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Mm. Yeah, you get up a little bit north of Milwaukee. All right, number 4, Great Falls, Montana.
Can't go wrong in Montana.
And usually the price and the cost of living is pretty good for
you.
The
air's clean, the water's fresh.
Yeah, right.
You some solar panels and go off the grid.
Right. Every once in a while, a steer wanders into your living room, but other than that, you're all right. Number 3. Kalamazoo, Michigan. That is the most interesting name for a city, I think. They even wrote a song about Kalamazoo, Michigan. But Kalamazoo, Michigan is a good place to go if you've got, you're pinching your pennies and buying a house. Number 2. Iowa City, Iowa. I have been there. It's a nice town. It's where the University of Iowa is located, the famous Iowa Hawkeyes. It is a nice area. That's one I would consider. Go ahead. You have something?
I was going to say in the northwest.
Go ahead.
I'm thinking North Dakota.
All right. North Dakota. That's good.
We had South Dakota. We got Montana.
Yeah. We already did South Dakota. You're right. Mm-hmm. It's actually Bloomington, Illinois, is number 1. Bloomington is located 130 miles southwest of Chicago. Best place to settle down for first-time homeowners. So there you go. All right, my friends, thank you so very much. We will be back on Monday. Please remember that freedom works.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
This is CBS News on the